called the New Atheists. I don't know if there's anything new about them. They're a little more activist and a little more vocal, a little more public. They write books, and they sell books, too. Like The God Delusion, things like that. I've said it before, I'll say it again, I don't believe in atheists. Just as they don't believe in God, I don't believe in atheists. I don't think a true atheist really exists. Now, atheists will disagree, but heck, they're all about tolerance. Or are they? That's one of the things that comes out in the New Atheist movement. They don't think so highly of tolerance, especially religious tolerance. We're going to be hearing about that here in the first 40 minutes of Issues, etc. Audio open lines. We've got a lengthy piece to stop and start and get your reaction to this NPR report on the New Atheists. And then, a little later in this hour, we'll be talking with John Dawson. He reviews movies for World Magazine. Of course, yesterday the Academy Award nominations were made, and we're going to talk about Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Actress, and one of my favorite categories, because these movies are often the best of the year, and they actually make money too, Animated Feature. And then in the second hour of the program, Dr. Peter Scare, the church remembers St. Timothy today, this New Testament saint, who appears hither and yon all over the New Testament. Dr. Peter Scare will join us for that remembrance. After that conversation, Dr. Alvin Schmidt, he's going to join us because, and you may have seen this in if you were looking through various papers, but it appeared first in the Washington Post, temporary enjoyment marriages in vogue again with some Iraqis. What is the view of marriage and divorce in Islam, and what's the difference of those views if you're a Sunni or a Shiite Muslim? Near the end of the program, Joe Dallas will join us. There are three common arguments that have been made for about 30 years now in favor of homosexual rights. We're going to have those three arguments and three responses from Joe Dallas in the last 25 minutes of Issues, etc. Our call-in numbers, you can join us as we come to you live this Wednesday, January the 24th. Actually, driving in today, I had a moment of confusion. I couldn't remember whether it was Wednesday or Thursday, which is a big deal for me because Thursday's my last live day of the week. And I could not for the life of me figure out whether it was Wednesday or Thursday until I looked at a calendar. It is Wednesday. No big news to anyone else except me. January the 24th, and we're coming to you live 505-7850. Or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, especially apropos for open lines, audio open lines, issues, etc. at kfuo.org. We'll jump right into the NPR report on the New Atheists. I do want your reaction. We'll be stopping to take your reactions. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or email us here in the studio, issues, etc. at kfuo.org.
In response to the global challenge posed by religious extremism, a small group of impassioned atheists has taken a new approach. They target the tolerant with both reason and ridicule. The New Atheists, as they were dubbed by Gary Wolfe in a recent article in Wired magazine, condemn, quote, not just belief in God, but respect for belief in God. Religion is not only wrong, it's evil. This month, the New York Times columnist Nicholas Kristof condemned the New Atheists as obnoxious and militant and in your face. And he wrote that this, quote, charge of the atheist brigade in its treatment of conservative Christians is, quote, often just as intolerant and mean.
Atheism already had a PR problem. Then came Sam Harris, author of Letter to a Christian Nation. When he wrote that since 20% of all recognized pregnancies end in miscarriage, God is, quote, the most prolific abortionist of all, he really made people mad. Harris is one of the most vocal spokesmen for the so-called New Atheists, along with Oxford scientist Richard Dawkins, author of The God Delusion. They wield logic like a bludgeon. Sam Harris concedes he's on a mission to make moderates less moderate.
Because moderates insist that we respect their religious faith, we can't criticize the role that religious faith is playing in dividing people.
And Harris says moderates are mistaken if they believe the wall between church and state can protect us from extremists. They've already scaled it.
If you think the creator of the universe is letting people fly planes into our buildings because we are tolerating gay marriage, or he's whipping up hurricanes in the Gulf because we're tolerating gay marriage. You have to try to legislate against gay marriage. And if you think the creator of the universe is going to be scandalized by the mere depiction of Muhammad, you have to take to the streets and start rioting. There's nothing intolerant or mean or fundamentalist or dogmatic about opposing this kind of delusion.
All right, before that goes on, I want your reaction. The new atheists have several features that distinguish them from, I guess you'd call them, the old atheists. I don't know. They're more vocal. They do tend to sell a few books. They mentioned a couple there. And they not only don't like the idea of God, they think it's not only wrong, it's dangerous. They don't have a very high view of religious tolerance because religious tolerance would tolerate religion. They don't think it's tolerable. They also don't seem to think very highly of so-called moderates because moderates would like to practice religious tolerance. Now, you may have, Sam Harris there, put two things together that don't necessarily belong together. One was some rather odd views put forth by at least two Christian leaders, I think Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson, at least for a few moments after September 11th, were saying that this was God's punishment on our toleration of homosexuality and gay marriage. As far as I know, publicly, they were the only two saying that. Both of them, insofar as they ever retract anything, retracted their statements. Sam Harris put that together with those who reacted after the cartoons of Muhammad appeared in Europe. Some might argue you're comparing apples and oranges there. Some might argue, Christians and Muslims might argue, that you're comparing two very extreme versions of their respective religions and not the thing itself. What do you think? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. It's audio open lines this Wednesday.
Real life differs from culture wars in the media.
Gary Wolf wrote about the new atheists in Wired magazine. He says that the blunt tactics used by the new atheists cannot be applied to personal arguments over faith, where delicate family and work relationships might hang in the balance. He says the polemics of new atheism can be just as nasty as the fundamentalists.
So while I don't accuse the atheists of being fundamentalists, the rhetoric they use resonates with the religious rhetoric that controls much of our cultural debate today.
Sam Harris.
There's nothing fundamentalist about rejecting the claim that the universe is 6,000 years old.
Yes, there is, says Christian Coalition founder Pat Robertson, speaking on the 700 Club.
What we've got to recognize just there in this case is that the evolutionists worship atheism. I mean, that's their religion. So this is an establishment of religion contrary to the First Amendment of the United States Constitution.
Now, this kind of irritates me a little bit because instead of this is, I think, an example. I would very, very seldom level this charge at National Public Radio. I think they're usually a good example of not only fair but thorough journalism. Go ahead, label me as a wild-eyed liberal if you want to, but if you listen to them, their bias, insofar as they have one, is very seldom in their news in evidence. But this is just lazy. Going to Pat Robertson, pitting the new atheist against Pat Robertson, when there are as many Christians who would take issue with Pat Robertson, even on this issue. Far more, I think, that would take issue with him than would agree with him. If you're going to talk about Christianity or Christendom in general, you have to choose, it's hard to choose even one spokesman, but it's very difficult to make the case that your best spokesman is Pat Robertson on any issue.
If, in fact, atheism were a religion, it might get more respect.
That label evokes a strong negative response in American life.
Penny Edgel is an associate professor of sociology at the University of Minnesota. In 2003, she and her colleagues, Doug Hartman and Joe Gratice, conducted a national poll to determine which of 10 ethnic and religious groups the average American would least like their children to marry.
We had included atheists on the list as a group that we expected would have low levels of disapproval, and therefore we thought, well, that will be a good yardstick against which to measure other kinds of attitudes. We were really very surprised.
Atheists were deemed the least desirable. Muslims did better in 2003, and gays and lesbians, maybe because most respondents had at least seen one or two. But research suggests avowed atheists are few and far between.
Just do the numbers, right? If they're only 7% of the American population, odds are most people don't know one.
People fear what they don't know, and so they tend to be suspicious of the absence of a presence in the lives of atheists.
It is religion, having a faith, that makes people in the American context seem trustworthy, like good citizens and good neighbors. So if you don't have that as a moral boundary, you're an outsider, an other, and perhaps a dangerous other.
We're all familiar with phrases like, you know, I have to say it, Jews are cheap, Italians are in the mafia, blacks are on welfare, gays are promiscuous, and atheists are immoral.
Ellen Johnson is the president of American Atheists, but the phrase she hates most of all goes a little something like this.
Perhaps you've heard the expression, there are no atheists in foxholes.
Wartime, there are no atheists in foxholes.
To amend the old saying about foxholes, there are no atheists driving trucks in Iraq.
That was CBS's Katie Couric and Bob Schieffer and NPR's John Burnett. Those are just the three we got tape of. News people say it all the time. Ellen Johnson.
It's demeaning to atheists. It's saying that under very dire circumstances or frightening situations, atheists will stop being atheists. They will start to be leaving. And this is really just a wish on the part of the religious, because it's
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Getting your reaction here during this first part of the program today, this Wednesday, January the 24th, to this NPR piece on the new atheists, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Love to hear what you have to say about the new atheists. Well, it doesn't surprise me that an atheist would be irritated by a phrase like, there are no atheists in foxholes. It implies rather strongly that under dire circumstances, atheism doesn't cut the mustard. It won't sustain you, and you abandon it rather quickly if things go wrong. But that is not the argument. That is not the theistic argument against atheism, that it simply doesn't work or people abandon it quickly when life gets tough. When I say I don't believe in atheists, I'm not saying there are no atheists in foxholes. In fact, I imagine I can find many a foxhole in this world with many an atheist in it. In fact, sometimes it's the foxhole that makes the atheist. Some of the most famous atheists of recent memory have become foxhole atheists. Life went wrong and they rejected God. Now, you can try and psychologize them and say they rejected God because they blame God and so they're not real atheists. They call themselves atheists. When I say I don't believe in atheists, what I mean is no one can consistently be an atheist. There is an element of knowledge built into us by the Creator, yes, by the Creator, that He exists. That's all the more there is to it, that He exists. But no one can honestly deny that God exists. It is what Jay Budziszewski of the University of Texas has called what we can't not know. And one of the things that we can't not know is that a God exists. Now, if this is true, if what Paul says there in Romans, that God has left the testimony of his existence in both creation and written in the human heart, I'm sorry. I don't believe in atheists. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We'll get back to this NPR piece on the new atheists, but first, let's talk with Mark, who calls from his car. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Pastor. As a former avid atheist, or I guess you would say a God rejectionist, I am more comfortable with these atheists becoming involved in government than some of the misguided Christians who've become involved in government, because at least I know that they're making decisions based on their God-given reasoning rather than some God crystal ball that they've created.
Yeah, I think in some ways I'd probably agree with you, Mark, and thank you very much for the call. What about the rest of you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or feel free to email us issuesetc@kfuo.org. In some ways, I would agree. All other things being equal, if I had to choose between an innocuous atheist in government, in office, an innocuous atheist and a Pat Robertson-esque Christian, atheist every day. I'm sorry. Why? Because on most issues, they probably just simply be making pragmatic, practical decisions. All other things being equal, there are a few problems with that. One of them is that I imagine it's hard to find an atheist who would be willing to protect the unborn. There are some, though. There are atheists for life. And I guess the other problem would be the fundamental inconsistency of someone serving in office in a system of government that recognizes fundamental human rights as a gift from the Creator. I guess if they were willing to say it's a natural endowment and leave it at that, it's a natural gift, it's something that is simply ours by virtue of our human nature, and not bring the Creator into it, if all they're doing is serving in office, I don't have a problem either. Back to NPR.
It's because it's not based in fact.
I thought it was a good line for the tape.
NPR's John Burnett.
And I didn't realize that it was so offensive to atheists. And I learned that in spades after the story came out. They spammed me for weeks with email saying, "We're outraged." So now I know.
And did you sort of see their point?
I do see their point. I literally hadn't thought about it before. And frankly, I will think twice about using the phrase again.
So if the news media aren't sensitive to atheists, Hollywood must be, right? I mean, the political right says it's so gay and liberal and irreligious.
Faith. That's another word for ignorance, isn't it?
That's Dr. Gregory House, a brilliant if antisocial diagnostician and the main character in the Fox medical drama, House. He's also an atheist. In a recent episode, House comes up against a teenaged faith healer who seems to be curing a patient with terminal cancer.
Fear for the human race. Teenager claims to be the voice of God, and people with advanced degrees are listening.
In a hospital staff lounge, a colleague posts a scoreboard with two columns, House versus God. Whenever House can't explain a medical result, says David Shore, creator of the series,
God got a check mark. When House explains something, House got a check mark.
At the end of the show, on that little tally board, you left it at a draw.
Yes.
But I think you were actually pulling your punches a little there, weren't you?
I hope not. Maybe. I do it sometimes. I don't know.
Yes, he does. Because House actually found a medical explanation for everything the faith healer claimed to be doing through God. Hollywood usually pulls its punches on atheism. Mostly, TV atheists are lost souls, like Jen in the teenage drama Dawson's Creek that ran from 1998 to 2003. Here was Jen in the series premiere.
You know, I don't do real well with church and the Bible and this prayer stuff.
I beg your pardon?
I don't covet a religious God. Grams, I'm an atheist.
And here she is in the series finale, terminally ill, taping a farewell message to her baby daughter.
I've never really believed in God, but I hope that you are able to believe in God. Because the thing that I've come to realize, sweetheart, is that it just doesn't matter if God exists or not. The important thing is for you to believe in something.
This is interesting. I like the juxtaposition between the two. The juxtaposition between House. I've never seen the show. Jeff, you watch the show all the time. He's addicted to House. Gregory House is like his... He's got a poster of Gregory House up in his office. He just thinks Gregory House is great. I didn't know he was an atheist until I heard
House
that.
Blog.
What?
I have a blog. Oh.
No, you do not. But so here's the juxtaposition between the hardcore, world-weary atheist that is Gregory House, M.D., and then the soft atheist of Dawson's Creek, that's kind of the convenient atheist, and then when terminally ill and anticipating her own mortality, hopes that at least her baby daughter will be able to believe in God. Although I doubt either of those are real accurate pictures of the atheist you might meet on the street. Although I have to say the conclusion that this poor character in Dawson's Creek came to is about as bleak as atheism. Well, it doesn't really matter whether God exists. It's just important that you believe in something. That's almost as, it's maybe even more bleak than atheism. That's not even agnosticism. That's what I've called apatheism. There are three categories. Yeah, you've got your atheists who are convinced there isn't a God. You've got your agnostics who are convinced they don't know if there's a God. And then you've got your apatheists who say things like, it doesn't matter whether God exists. What matters is that you believe in something. It's kind of the 12-step AA version of God, your higher power. Here's an email from Steve in St. Louis. He says, what I find most interesting about the new atheists is that they're so dogmatic about their position. They're assuming that they have some complete knowledge, which is the greatest form of hubris. I also find it interesting that they can blame all of the world's problems on religion, but they make excuses for the abuses of atheists, such as Stalin, Pol Pot, Mao. We could mention a couple others. These atheists have killed more people than all religions over the course of human history. Well, yes, atheism was a real problem in the 20th century, wasn't it? A lot of people died under the iron boot of atheistic political systems. There's no doubt about that. So atheism, as far as, you know, when it was given a chance as the driving force of a society, when it was given an opportunity to be the driving force of a society as opposed to any religious worldview, it didn't fare so well, now did it? And it didn't last very long. Oh, you still got a few holdouts like Hugo Chavez and he's, I don't even, do we know if he's still holding out, whether or not Castro's still holding out? So you've got a few holdouts. China would be one, but China has even kind of bellied up to the bar of religious tolerance. I wonder what the new atheists think about that. Just ask an atheist, and thank you very much for the comment via email. Ask an atheist, would you prefer to live in Nazi Germany, Stalinist Russia, Pol Pot's regime, Maoist China, or the United States or Western Europe, or any other civilization that has been at least influenced by a Christian worldview? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. When we come back from this break, we'll get to the rest of the NPR report on the new atheist. Just a few minutes left and plenty of time for you to call. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or email us issuesetc@kfuo.org. John Dawson will be our guest to talk about the Academy Award nominations for Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Actress, and Best Animated Feature coming up in just about 10 minutes on the other side of this break. That'll take us through the 4 o'clock hour. Dr. Peter Scare will join us at 4 o'clock to talk about St. Timothy, a New Testament saint the church remembers today. Boy, that's dangerous stuff. I mean, you start talking, remembering New Testament saints, and you're practically overturning the world. We'll be right back.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Deaconess Pam Nielsen, Senior Editor at Concordia Publishing House, on the Christ-Centered Cross Focus of Growing in Christ, the new Sunday School curriculum from Concordia Publishing House.
We've been very intentional in one, teaching the scriptures. We are concerned about Bible literacy. Pastors tell us they get kids in confirmation that they don't know any of the Bible stories, they don't know any of the Bible people. So we're trying to teach the Bible stories, the who, what, where, and when. But we're teaching them in the context of Christ. And every story, every week, be it Old or New Testament, connects to Christ as the Savior.
For more information about growing in Christ, call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, or find the Growing in Christ logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org. It's a Christ-centered, cross-focused Sunday school curriculum, Growing in Christ.
China's one-child policy is having unintended consequences.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Where are all the girls? That's a question Chinese men of marrying age are asking. The latest census shows 120 men for every 100 women in China, and the numbers are worse among those 25 and younger. The gender imbalance is a direct result of population control policies implemented after World War II. The program forces Chinese couples to have only one child, and because of the traditional preference for sons, unborn baby girls are routinely aborted or killed via infanticide. A forever altered Chinese society must now come to terms with its missing members.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
This presentation of the Meyer Minute on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Thrivent Financial, where values thrive, and online at thrivent.com.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. If you watched the State of the Union last night, did you see how cameras and commentators focused on wannabe presidents? How is it, the satirist Horace asked, that no one living is content with a lot that either his choice has given him or chance has thrown in his way? Horace then tells how the soldier would rather be a sailor, but the sailor envies the soldier's life. The city dweller envies the rural dweller, and vice versa. I want to be president. On the other hand, if you are completely content with your lot in life, you could be useless. If I'm reading it right, the Bible suggests you can be content and not content at the same time. First and foremost, contentment comes when your focus is on God, God blessing you so abundantly that you love Him with all your heart, soul, and strength. But out of that comes desire to let God use you to do good to others, a selfless discontent. And that's why the Ten Commandments begin with God and then move toward our duties to others. God only knows if the wannabe presidents have balanced their contentment in Him and desires to do good to others. The real question is, have you? St. Paul says, Philippians 4:11, I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances.
This presentation of the Meyer Minute on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Thrivent Financial, online at thrivent.com. We do more than work. We work with a purpose.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Finishing up this NPR report on the new atheists and asking for your response here during a little bit more audio open lines. Then we'll be reviewing the Academy Award nominations with John Dawson. That's coming up here in about 10 minutes. Well, let's just compare the atheists and the good, so-called good they've wrought in the world, like Mao, Pol Pot, Stalin, Lenin, with a theist I know named Pastor Matt Harrison and his little organization called LCMS World Relief, where they're pretty upfront about the fact that the relief efforts that they extend around the world are made possible only by the love and the mercy that Christ has shown them. Just do that little comparison there. Pastor Matt Harrison and LCMS World Relief are worthy of your support. Find out more about them by going to our website, issuesetc.org. Their logo is there. Click on it. You'll find out more. Or call them toll-free, 1-888-930-4438, 1-888-930-4438, LCMS World Relief. Bill is calling from his car. Hi, Bill. Thanks for waiting.
Thank you. Comment on the question. Here in the United States, most of us
you abide by the law, you pay your taxes and so forth, and the government pretty much stays out of your life. You can believe what you want. So I'm curious as to why these so-called new atheists, why are they setting up these straw men to get so angry at? What's the real beef? What's the need to get angry about?
That's a good question. I mean, that's a good general question for atheism, which is, if, generally speaking, we don't, when you don't believe that something exists, you don't spend a lot of time thinking about it, worrying about it, or even arguing against it. Unicorns, for example, I always use that example. I've seen no real evidence that unicorns exist, with the exception of a wonderfully funny little film on YouTube, Charlie the Unicorn. That's where you find unicorns, in cartoons, right? They don't exist. You don't see them walking out in the woods or down the street, or you don't see them in zoos. So, if I see no evidence that God exists, which is the atheist's basic argument, they see no evidence that God exists. If I see no evidence that unicorns exist, I really don't spend a lot of time thinking about unicorns, worrying about unicorns. And those out there who may believe in unicorns, I don't take them seriously. I certainly don't get all worked up. I don't get up on my hind legs about it. But atheists are different. Even the ones that are a little more passive, less activist, you could say they have an axe to grind. If God doesn't really exist and there is no evidence for it, why do they take us so seriously? Say, well, because religion has done so much harm in the world. Again, I think we put that one to bed. If you want to just compare a theistic worldview with an atheistic worldview, who's done more harm? And if they say, well, atheism's never been given a chance, yes, it has. The whole 20th century is pretty much a study in what happens when you give atheism a chance to be the worldview that drives a society. Bloodiest century in human history. Kelly writes from Dallas, my mother says that she's an atheist. She just finished reading The God Delusion by Richard Dawkins, but says, if you fear losing your faith, I suggest avoiding this one. What jumps out to me about my mother is that she, to me, seems to desire to be an atheist. My stepdad is a Kantian philosopher and atheist, but is not really an atheist. Her mother died this summer, and my mom talks about how she knows her mother is in a better place and how she's looking down on us. My mother and her sisters even believe that grandma helps them decorate their houses, and I assume grandma's dead, decorate their houses and gardens, things that grandma used to enjoy. My point is, writes Kelly, mom is an atheist when it looks intelligent and dignified, but when it comes down to it, she still believes in a life after death and still prays when things are going bad. My mother personifies the quote, there are no atheists in foxholes. Well, I didn't say the quote isn't true, but it may not always be true. I mentioned Jay Bujaszewski before. There is a great distinction he makes, because he used to be what he called kind of the casual atheist. And he admits now he didn't really think through his positions. And when he started to, he found out they didn't hold up. Let's go back to the NPR report on the new atheists.
There's very few openly atheistic people on television, and I find that a little surprising.
House creator and writer David Shore.
Atheists to me fall in the same category to some extent as lawyers, in the sense that people hate them in general, but like their own. They know House. They like House. They don't care he's an atheist. I don't think.
You know, I get it. People are just looking for a way to fill the holes. But they want the holes. They want to live in the holes. And they go nuts when someone else pours dirt in their holes. Climb out of your holes, people!
I like that one. I like that one a lot.
But even Shore is inclined to believe there are no atheists in foxholes, or at least hospitals.
To ignore issues of faith is to ignore a pretty fundamental part of all people's lives when they're in the hospital facing death. I'm not saying all people find God, but they certainly do ask those questions.
What's an atheist to do? American Atheist President Ellen Johnson says they have to organize.
Until the atheists start voting their atheism and be identified as a voting bloc in America, the politicians aren't going to listen to us. We're not going to have any influence in the public schools. We're not going to have any influence in the media or anywhere else.
But even she concedes that organizing atheists is like herding cats,
Sam Harris says the only way to win is to keep up the pressure until religious tolerance is no longer tolerated.
I think the criticism of irrationality just has to come from 100 sides all at once in the entertainment community. I mean, you'll just have people making jokes that are funny enough and true enough so as to put religious certainty in a bad light.
We know atheists are brave.
Comedy Central's Stephen Colbert.
They're not afraid to go to hell and be tortured by Satan for all eternity, which is what's going to happen.
One day, someone in the White House press corps will hear the President of the United States express some certainty about being in dialogue with the creator of the universe, and he or she will ask a question, which should be on everybody's mind, how is this any different from thinking you're in dialogue with Zeus?
That day is far off. But Harris has a great deal of faith in his fellow man.
I'm hopeful that journalists and people in the entertainment industry are waiting for the permission to express their doubts. And I think that permission is coming. I mean, I'm trying to do what I can to engineer it in my hard-headed and boorish way. And I feel just from the contacts I have in both industries that there's a profound sense of relief that comes with hearing somebody call a spade a spade.
Was that what Stephen Colbert was doing when he addressed an audience of Hollywood elite at the Emmys this year?
Good evening, godless sodomites.
Harris may have no tolerance for the gospel, but as an atheist trying to enlist Hollywood in his crusade, Colbert's greeting has to sound like some kind of good news.
All right, there's the piece from National Public Radio. A few final thoughts, and we're going to talk about the Oscar nominations. Well, I seriously doubt if you've got 7% of the population, generously construed, if you've got 7% of the population, you're going to be able to sway the machine that is Hollywood to your non-religious tolerance position. All you really have to say to kind of put that one firmly outside the circle of reasonable thinking is, do you want to live in a world where religion isn't tolerated? Look, I'm not talking, I'm not saying this as a Christian apologist. I'm saying this simply in terms of the demographics. 22% of people in the world are Muslim. Roughly a third of the people in the world are some form of Christian. You've got a lot of Hindus and a lot of Buddhists. Relatively few Jews. And then all the others. There are a lot of animists out there. There are a lot of people who worship their ancestors out there. Whatever your religion, you want to live in a world without religious tolerance? It may not be the best solution we have, but it's better than none whatsoever.
The films nominated for Best Picture of 2006 are... Babel, Alejandro González Iñárritu, John Killick, and Steve Gollin, producers. The Departed, nominees to be determined. Letters from Iwo Jima, Clint Eastwood, Steven Spielberg, and Robert Lawrence, producers. Little Miss Sunshine, nominees to be determined. And The Queen, Andy Harris, Christine Langan, and Tracy Seward, producers.
All right, those are Best Picture nominations by the Academy. And who's going to get the Oscar? We're going to talk a little bit, not making any predictions, hopefully, but talk about the merit of the films that are being nominated this year for the Academy Awards. John Dawson joins us for the remainder of this segment of Issues Etc. He reviews movies for World Magazine, and I imagine he was watching those five, or at least had his ear to the ground on those five films: Babel, The Departed, Letters from Iwo Jima, Little Miss Sunshine, and The Queen. John, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
What do you make of the slate there for Best Picture, those five that were named?
Well, what strikes me is that there's no real clear-cut choice, I guess. I mean, the people really want The Departed. It sold the best. It grossed about $253 million. In comparison to the others, it kind of blew them out of the water in terms of ticket sales. But in terms of artistic craft, they're all different in their ways. I have favorites, of course. I really liked letters from Iwo Jima and the Queen, which are two of the ones that probably the fewest people in America have actually seen those films of that slate.
So which do you think, if this is simply judging film excellence, mm-hmm. as best picture, which do you think actually deserves best picture of those five?
Well, I have to put it between Letters from Iwo Jima and The Queen, and I'll tell you why, is because both those films, and we'll start with, I guess, Letters from Iwo Jima. Letters takes a perspective that it's directed by Clint Eastwood. It was kind of the companion piece to his Iwo Jima war or battle film called Flags of Our Fathers. It's in Japanese, and it takes the perspective of the Japanese in that battle. And I really think that it must have been very difficult to piece together a perspective from the Japanese in a way to humanize them, you know, because the caricatures of the Japanese during World War II were very real, but at the same time not to overly gloss over the atrocities and horrors of the Japanese soldiers. So I think Eastwood did Letters with a lot of craft and a lot of skill.
What about The Queen? Why does that stand out to you?
It's another perspective piece. The Queen is all about the reaction of the royal family to Princess Diana's death back in the late 90s, I believe 97. And what's really interesting about The Queen is that it takes you on an inside look inside the royal family, and it's a portrait that, you know, we in America don't deal with monarchs, so it's unusual for us, but even for the British people, they do not have any sort of inside look at what the royals are really like. And so while they may speculate, the Queen and, you know, the people who wrote the screenplay went to great lengths to study and interview and just to see how the monarchy and the Queen, Queen Elizabeth herself, really reacted to Princess Diana's death.
Why is Little Miss Sunshine not only getting so much buzz, but also on this list? It's a rather low budget. It's got some good names in it, of course, and it's a very odd story, kind of in the lines of I Heart Huckabees and other films of the past.
Right.
But it's not, as you said before, it's not a big box office draw.
No, it's done okay. I mean, it's done about $84.5 million in business. But what sets it apart, I guess, from the other four is that certainly Letters and The Queen are not, they're dramas, you know, they're not necessarily uplifting. And the other two, Babel and The Departed, I mean, those are real downers. They're real kind of exposing the depravity of man. And whereas Little Miss Sunshine, you know, there's plenty, it's rated R. I mean, it's plenty of, you know, life is screwed up, but it does it with a smile on its face. And it's not as, I think, emotionally taxing as the other films are. And so I think a lot of people, you know, of those five, a lot of people probably left Little Miss Sunshine feeling the best about themselves.
Here are the nominees for Best Actor.
The nominees for Best Performance by an Actor in a Leading Role are Leonardo DiCaprio in Blood Diamond, Ryan Gosling in Half Nelson, Peter O'Toole in Venus, Will Smith in The Pursuit of Happiness, and Forrest Whitaker in The Last King of Scotland.
All right, those are the five there. Which do you think deserves Best Actor?
Well, I think it should go to Will Smith. I think he's certainly the biggest name on the board, and The Pursuit of Happiness didn't start out with a whole lot of momentum, but really Will Smith's craft, I mean, he's not the television actor that everyone got to know on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air anymore. He's accomplished. He's, you know, well-rounded as an actor. And he plays his part just so well. And maybe the only better performance by any male this year would be by his son, who just played you know, an adorable child kind of dealing with his father's trials and tribulations of trying to get a job on a with a big firm, with a big stock trading firm, really having, you know, nothing going for him. So I think Will Smith, I think most people think he's going to take this one home.
Who would you think would be a runner-up? I mean, for me, it would come down to Peter O'Toole, because this is a guy with, well, he's obviously ending a very long acting career. Or Forrest Whitaker, who took a role there that probably nobody really wants to play this guy.
Right, right. Well, I mean, before those, Leonardo DiCaprio certainly has the next biggest name for in what he did in Blood Diamond. But for me, and, you know, Peter O'Toole certainly has the skins on the wall, but Forrest Whitaker, he comes in playing Idi Amin, the brutal Ugandan dictator. And I've got to say, Forrest Whitaker is absolutely frightening. He is just a scary, scary man when he's portraying Idi Amin. And, you know, that's to his credit. He portrayed him very, very well. Really brought out, you know, the horrors of that man.
Here's Best Actress.
For Best Performance by an Actress in a Leading Role, the nominees are Penelope Cruz in Bolvar, Judi Dench in Notes on a Scandal, Helen Mirren in The Queen, Meryl Streep in The Devil Wears Prada, and Kate Winslet in Little Children.
All right, John, the surprise there for me, just because the movie wasn't previewed as some sort of Oscar generator, was The Devil Wears Prada and Meryl Streep.
Yeah, yeah. Meryl's had a long career, and actually, I think The Devil Wears Prada, I believe it is the highest grossing movie of her career, which says a lot. It started slow. It gained a lot of momentum. She plays a fashion magazine editor, sort of an eccentric boss. And she's done really well with this one, but I think the person that most people will point to will be Helen Mirren, who most Americans aren't familiar with, but she is a longtime screen veteran in Great Britain. She portrays Queen Elizabeth II in The Queen, and everything about her performance just shouts, "Give me the Oscar." She looks like Queen Elizabeth II. She talks like her. She gives her a soul to a person that Britons only know by, look, there's the face on the postage stamp. You know, there's the person on the front of the tabloid. For what I saw, Helen Mirren is the clear choice in this, and I think she has the best performance of the year.
What, before we go on to the final category we want to talk about, which was animated feature, then these things really make money.
Right.
What is this? Some years you get best actor, best actress, tied into Best Picture nominations. They seem to go together, hand in hand. This year, there's no overlap.
Sure. I mean, this is not a year where you have a film that's just going to sweep through. I mean, many people thought Dreamgirls was going to just kind of sweep through all of these things. But, you know, as we've talked about, Dreamgirls wasn't nominated for Best Picture. It has no nominees in Best Actor or Actress. And that surprised a lot of people, though it has multiple, I think, seven or eight nominations in other categories. But there isn't a powerhouse movie out there this year.
Here's the final category I wanted to deal with today. It happens to be my favorite, but that's just because I'm a big kid. It's animated feature.
And for animated feature film, the nominees are Cars, John Lasseter, Happy Feet, George Miller, and Monster House, Gil Keenan.
Okay, which of these do you think, it's kind of funny to give Oscars to computer animated films, but which do you think deserves it?
Well, it's the way of the future, you know. It's there's at least 10 of these things out every year, and they make just tons of money. I think the one that probably will do the best is Happy Feet, which is a movie that I didn't particularly like. For the first hour or so of Happy Feet, I thought it was maybe the best animated film I had ever seen. It was incredible. It was funny. It was lighthearted. It was brilliant. It was a good musical. And then, for the last 40 minutes, it turned into a political screed against all sorts of things. And it would have been fine if it had actually directed its political screed in any one direction, but it attacks overfishing, global warming, trashing of the oceans. I mean, all sorts of things, and it turns into a very depressing sad film that, though won a lot of critical acclaim by people who think in those terms, was not what it promised to be. Whereas I think that the Academy will probably like Happy Feet the most, I don't think the kids have, although it sold a lot of tickets.
Are they going to have to create some new categories with these new animated features now that it's become possible to make full-length features where actors are actually just doing voice work and the whole visual spectacle is a technical feat?
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that, but you know, there is no place for Robin Williams, who played in Happy Feet, to go in the best actor category. He did a great job voicing one of the penguins in that movie. Maybe there needs to be a best vocal actor, a best vocal actress. I don't know. That'd be interesting. And I'm sure we're moving towards that direction.
Before we let you go, Ellen DeGeneres has been announced as the host of this year's Academy Awards. How do you think she's going to do?
She's pretty funny. She's, you know, it's easy to classify Ellen in her, you know, role as a lesbian entertainer, I guess, in that mold that you have Rosie O'Donnell and Ellen. But the things that differentiate the two is that Ellen seems generally, she has a smile on her face where Rosie generally carries a scowl. So I think she'll do fine. I think she's capable of being very funny. And so, and I don't think she'll, I don't think that she will be too off the cuff with her political remarks.
Is it possible to put into a sentence what an event like the Academy Awards, which is kind of Hollywood self-congratulatory, but it's also a mirror of our culture? Is it possible to put into a sentence what our films at this snapshot in history say about American culture?
Yes, probably. It wouldn't be my sentence. Thomas Hobbes said that life, that our lives in nature are solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short. And I think that is the Hollywood message these days.
Mm. John Dawson reviews movies for World Magazine. You can read his reviews on the web at worldmag.com, worldmag.com. John, thanks for being our guest.
You're welcome. Anytime.
Happy to do it. Dr. Peter Scare is going to join us on the other side of this break. Today, the church is remembering St. Timothy. Now, Timothy is all over the New Testament. Three books, I think, bear his name, although he did not write them. He is the recipient of these letters. And there he is in the narrative of the New Testament, too. He's associated with the church in Ephesus. He is, at some point in the New Testament, a young pastor. And most of the advice that the New Testament gives to pastors comes from those letters Paul wrote to Timothy. We're going to be remembering this New Testament saint with Dr. Peter Scare on the other side of the break. Dr. James Berkey will join us. He wrote a commentary in today's St. Louis Post-Dispatch titled, "Anyone But a Bush or a Clinton?" And we're going to be talking with him about the upcoming presidential elections. Dr. Alvin Schmidt will join us to talk about marriage and divorce in Islam. And then Joe Dallas will round off today's program. We're going to respond to three arguments, very common arguments made for a long time here in the United States in favor of gay rights. That's coming up here in the last half hour or so of Issues Etc. You can join us for the remainder of the program. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. You can also write us via email. We get it right here in the studio. Issues, ETC, at KFUO.org. Again, Issues, ETC, at KFUO.org. We're coming to you live this Wednesday, January the 24th. Dr. Peter Scare will be our guest from Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, to talk about the New Testament's Timothy.
Where Christianity meets culture. You're listening to Issues, Etc.